I don't
know. Oh yeah, I saw a tweet. You might have sent it to me. I can't remember. I saw a tweet yesterday that said someone was like, "I think at this point we should just scrap MLS completely and start over."
Yeah,
that's insane. Yeah, that's such an insane thought.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like. And what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Designated Players and MLS Podcast. In what has been an insanely busy week in MLS news, from USOC comments to roster rule changes to MLS Next Pro teams to CONCACAF Champions League, there are so many things to cover, and we aren't going to actually be able to do it in just one episode. So this week, we will have two This Week in MLS News' episodes. I think that made sense. Basically, Monday, Wednesday, we're going to talk MLS news on both days, and we're going to hear from you about what your thoughts are. But we are going to cover a lot over these next two episodes, but today specifically, it is about the U.S. Open Cup once again. Don Garber and Nelson Rodriguez gave an interview with some, as we like to call it, billboard-level material quotes that we are going to dive into. And then we're also going to go ahead and talk about the new layout in terms of roster rules for the cup itself as it relates to MLS Next Pro teams and some of the payouts as well. So lots to cover today. And then in the next episode, we'll go ahead and hit Champions League, MLS Next Pro team locations, and roster rule changes in the league. So I'm Andrew. That's Connor above me. That's Grace behind me. And we're here to talk about MLS news. Connor, how you doing?
I am doing fine right now, but if Seattle blows this lead, I'll be doing significantly worse.
I was trying to wonder why you were so quiet. It's because I had my volume turned all the way down.
That was intentional, wasn't it? Just admit it. It's fine.
I don't like you, so that probably
didn't change anything.
Yeah. Listen, tons to talk about today, specifically U.S. Open Cup. I'm really hoping this is the last time that we have to talk about stuff like this.
It's not going to be the last time.
Yeah, I don't think it will be. But listen, this whole interview was something, you know, out of a storybook, really. I mean, it was so many things that, you know, popped off, and we'll talk about it. We're going to, as we always do, guys, we're always going to hit it with both sides of the coin, right? We're going to tell you why we think it might be good. We're going to tell you why we think it might be bad. And then it'll be up to you to decide which one you want to, you know, lean towards. And of course, before we do any of that, we got to talk about scarves, because that's what we're here for, right? That's a real part of this podcast. So, Connor, what are you rocking?
If we're talking U.S. Open Cup, I'm going to bring out the scarf of a team that's actually participating in it this year. And that would be the team that's going to win it all. Atlanta United.
That's cute.
Going to take our second U.S. Open Cup. No big deal.
That's cute. I myself am rocking a new scarf, courtesy of our friends at stlouissoccernews.com. Kind enough to send us scarves of our own to enhance the scarf wall, if you will. And knowing St. Louis's rich history in the U.S. Open Cup, we are going to show it off today. Nice big city on one side with the logo. Great swirl design as well. And then the entire name and badge on the other side. Super clean, super nice scarf. So thank you again for sending that. Really appreciate it. And am looking forward to keeping it on the wall. You can kind of see behind my head right there. That is where it will stay. And hopefully I'll keep my head out of the spot next time, so it'll be on full display. All right, let's get into the difficult stuff. On Thursday, Jeff Reuter and the Athletic staff dropped an article covering a roundtable conversation, I think is what I'll call it, with Don Garber. Okay, let's get into the difficult stuff here. On Thursday, Jeff Reuter and the Athletic staff dropped an article from a roundtable conversation with Don Garber and Nelson Rodriguez regarding some of the most polarizing topics in current day sports, mainly the U.S. Open Cup. There are some, as I mentioned before, billboard material quotes in there, but we read the whole thing. We're going to share our takes on what was said, what we think it means, good, bad, ugly, indifferent, as we always do, right? So a reminder for our listeners, This is the third time we are covering the U.S. Open Cup, and our thoughts on the entire situation can be found in depth at episodes 201 and 223. The article opens with the Billboard quote of all Billboard quotes, with Garber likening the MLB or the NFL to playing in a tournament in which they had no control in the middle of the season, saying that it isn't the American way. He follows it up with the statement I and a lot of others have been waiting for really this whole time, claiming that they didn't want to be in it because they had no control financially, branding-wise, facilities, the works. They didn't like the fact that they weren't in charge. And this is the transparency we've been waiting for since December. Right. The decision was always marred in this ability to control whatever MLS was doing, build the brand, improve exposure, whatever. But hiding behind the schedule congestion nonsense is just it painted right and correctly so painted MLS as dishonest and fraudulent. So and that's not the PR that was needed. So I want to ask you kind of how you feel about that first opening quote where, you know, saying that MLB or NFL aren't playing in midseason tournaments that they don't control.
So I guess I have two thoughts on it. One of which is that I think it's a stupid quote, considering even if you don't have US Open Cup, I mean, you're still doing a mid-season tournament with Leagues Cup. The only difference is that I guess you have control. I guess that's the difference that he's insinuating at. But the second thing to me is that it shows that Garber's clear comparison is not other soccer leagues, it's with other sports leagues in the US. He's not talking about England or Germany or Brazil or Argentina or even Liga MX, saying like, oh, you know, like they're doing mid-season tournaments, we're doing mid-season tournaments. Like his priority seems to be focused on MLB, NFL, other American sports, where he's saying, okay, they don't do mid-season tournaments, so why should we? So it's, I don't really, like, I guess you could make the argument to compare it either. I'm sure the pro rel crowd is not going to be thrilled with the fact that it seems his focus is on the other American sports. And if that's the case, I think his actions will probably move more towards that route and Americanize it even more, which is, I'm sure, going to infuriate them. So I will definitely wait to see the reaction from that group. I don't really love the comment. I just feel like he might as well have just said, we don't have financial control over it. I don't know why he needed to say like, oh, the MLB or NFL doesn't do midseason tournaments. It's like, okay, well, even without US Open Cup, you just implemented a brand new tournament to play midseason. So this is a weak argument, in my opinion, from them.
Yeah, totally. Right. Like, the control part is the important part, right? Because they play in a midseason tournament, but they control it. They can control what's being shown and the level that's being, you know, portrayed and all that sort of stuff. So it's all about the control. And, you know, the quote particularly has been used across, you know, U.S. Open Cup kind of faithful Twitter, if you will, to paint Garber as somebody who doesn't understand the game as it's meant to be played and trying to Americanize it and rolling with this franchise model instead of allowing the lower leagues to grow and all this stuff. And here's where I'm going to disagree with that take, because I think Garber absolutely understands how this game is meant to be. But he, and something that we covered last time we talked about this, is working towards a setup that he can control the whole way through, right? And when I say he, I mean he's just a speaker for the owners, right? But at this point, they want to make sure that if they're going to do something, they will be able to put it in the best light so that they can get the best sort of view of it, if you will. And I don't mean a PR view, but a, you know, if you're showing a bunch of games on high school fields and stuff like that, you know, they don't like, and to the soccer faithful, we love that, right? Pro players playing on, you know, Burr Intermediate School, right back from where we're from, like, awesome. We would love to see stuff like that. But to them, that's not a product they want to put on, whatever it may be. Like, there's clearly a reason why they're doing it in terms of what the product they're putting out there, the entertainment product. But I agree with you. I think it's a garbage take, because you know, they keep trying to hide behind these different things where at the end of the day, they finally have come out and just said, we don't control it. And it's costing us a lot of money and we don't like that. So I am glad that they kind of came out and stepped up and said that just straight up, like, hey, you know, they stopped hiding behind this, like, oh, schedule congestion, right? Schedule congestion. That's the only thing that matters, right? Where it's clearly not. It played a little bit of part in it. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But at the end of the day, it's about control and what they are putting out into the viewers' eyes. Because again, you're trying to compare both with what's at home, but the other half of the group that you're trying to, I guess, pander to is the people who keep looking back and say, well, I'm not going to watch that league because England's better. So.
Whatever. Hold on. I need to go back to one of the comments you said earlier because I need to call you out on it.
Okay.
You talk about how you would absolutely love to see the teams play on a middle school field, but yet all I've heard for the past few years is how much you complain about teams having to go play at Yankee Stadium and play against NYCFC.
Oh, no. So, baseball stadium's different. Like, I'm okay with
people. Why is it different? It makes no sense. It's probably still in better condition than a middle school field.
So obviously that's an exaggeration, right? Like, but the lower level fields that we're talking about, the ones that are, I'm trying to think of like good examples, right? So,
they're playing on like a D3 college field.
I guess if like you're thinking about, I guess the one that's in my head, right? Lexington FC playing in Georgetown, right? Small, compact, not these big, beautiful stadiums with, you know, what I'm looking at in Seattle right now with half empty seats or whatever. But that intimate atmosphere that maybe doesn't have the best sight line from the press box, right? Or maybe doesn't have the best atmosphere like that you can visually see. Like I'm not, the thing I don't like about baseball stadiums, of course, one is the fact that you're playing through an infield, so you're covering the dirt, it looks poor. That you can have an honest disagreement about, because I mean, I even said that last week. I don't know if we were recording or not, but I watched the USL Championship game in I think it was El Paso, and they were playing in like the majority of the field was in the infield. Like that is a major issue, and I'm okay with that not being what they want to show. But that's a small percentage of what this is, right? Most of them are playing at a college stadium or some other smaller field. And that is something that I'm sure they want to control because they can't monetize it, which again is a garbage argument. But the baseball stadium is to me a separate argument, because football doesn't belong in a baseball stadium. That's just my take. But yeah, so next up, the other prediction that we made in the first time that we did this is coming true. Garber and Rodriguez and all the other boardroom guys, whatever, are very confident that this move is what forced U.S. soccer to add more funding, better commitments to the tournament, increase travel stipends, all this stuff. They're saying that their bluff or move or play, I don't really know how you want to phrase that, is what forced this to happen. And we talked about this a little bit off air, and there's some truth to that, I think. But I'll let you share your thoughts on that here.
I mean, I think we talked about this a decent amount at this point already, but the cup was in clear need of more investment, you know, whether that's going out and finding better or more sponsors to get that investment, but the cup was in desperate need to get more money and some more investment, whether into like the lower leagues or just the broadcast coverage, whatever it may be, because I mean, you watched it pretty, I would say, like, more than the average person, I would say. And I'm sure you could speak on behalf of how poor the broadcast coverage can be at times, a la the Flower City game, if I'm remembering the team right.
Yep.
The one with the split screen looking like a mess. Like, I kind of get where Garber's coming from if that's, like, what he's referring to, because could you imagine watching like the Jets and the Bills play and your screen is looking like the Flower City game? Like that would be ridiculous. Like people would make like a huge hubbub about it. It'd be going viral. It would look awful for the NFL. So like from that regard, I get that Garber is like, well, if it would look bad for every other major American sport, like why is it fine for us? And maybe that's a whole different debate onto like how money should be kind of put into the lower leagues for investment, or maybe that's just a cup thing and maybe we'll see better this year around. But I think the investment is definitely never going to be a bad thing. The more that they can invest into the tournament, the better the production and the quality of the tournament is going to be. So I still don't love the way that the league went about it. I feel like it could have been done in a better way, but I mean, I'm still happy at the end of the day that there's more going into the tournament.
So I'm curious from your point, did MLS's move with the, I don't know, again, if you want to call it a bluff, a play, whatever, did this whole scene force U.S. soccer's hand? Do you think that that is really what happened there? Because, you know, there are people who, and again, rightfully so, we're not calling these people out as saying, you know, they are incorrect in this statement. MLS has had the onus to promote this tournament as their own, or, you know, they were in charge of the promotion company, right? Some, and nothing grew from it. And I don't really know what those figures are, otherwise I would drop them, but it's clear that nothing grew from them over the 15, 20 years, however long they had it. So did this force U.S. soccer, in your opinion, to make these moves?
I would say it certainly feels like that, unless it's a really weird coincidence that all of a sudden MLS threatens to come out of the tournament and they all of a sudden are investing much more into the tournament. So I would say the correlation is probably there in the fact that this certainly put the pressure on them to up their game and make some changes, which, you know, at the end of the day is a nice thing, but still it's like from a PR perspective, the journey to get to this point didn't make MLS look very good.
Yeah. I think that's a great way to put it, because as I just mentioned before, I do think that there's some truth to this belief that MLS's move did encourage this, whether it was coming or not, by the way, because I do, you know, when I'm reading these things, it sounds like there was investment coming, or there was more investment last year than any year before and the year before that. So the rate at which this happened, I can't speak to. But it's very easy to sit by and allow the people that pay for everything to keep paying for it while talking about all the things that you want to happen, right? Mom, I want to buy this. Dad, I want to buy this. Mom, I want this. Dad, this should happen. Not coming out of your pocket. It's easy to say, right? But now, you know, and it kind of twofold, right? So U.S. soccer comes out and says the U.S. Cup is super, or Open Cup is super important. We care about the cup and want it to be the best that it ever is. Well, now MLS walks away from being the group that's supposed to promote this, and now the ball falls in their court, right? Well, are you going to put the investment and the sponsorship and all this stuff into it, or are you going to go back on your word from everything you've been saying when we were in charge of it? And again, PR-wise, terrible look. But I think that if U.S. soccer had stuck around and the U.S. Or if MLS stuck around and U.S. soccer was continually leaning on them, I don't think much changes, right? Because you're in the same old status quo. It was a mix-up. U.S. soccer stepped up and said, okay, we're going to commit to what we wanted to do, and now we're here. Again, to the level at which these changes that we're going to talk about here in a little bit, the level at which this stunt impacted it, I don't know. But I don't think it's a far line to draw from this happening to the changes happening, where they were probably in the pipeline, if I had to guess, where there was some 5-year plan saying, oh yeah, we're going to transition this over and these are the changes we want to make by 2030, right? Let's just pick an arbitrary date. Is it possible that U.S. soccer's timeline was moved up with this decision? Maybe. Again, this is all speculation, but
if only someone could do that to MLS with the financial rules.
Bro, straight up, right? and that's the catch 22, right? Could you imagine somebody just being like, yeah, well, sucks to suck, but if you don't open those roster rules and add mid-level spending at the level of, you know, at Liga MX, we're just gonna leave you hanging. Sorry.
Yeah. Maybe someone like Apple could do it. Be
Bro,
like, we'll hold the broadcast.
Somebody call. Who's in charge of Apple these days? Who do we need to call?
Yeah, whoever. You can find out whoever.
Yeah, we'll give
them a little Google.
We'll move on from those notes, and fan support was the next topic of conversation in this article. They did a fan panel and asked which competitions were the most interesting to them. They claimed that the results were that the U.S. Open Cup was a 6% interest to people after 100 years of existence. The League's Cup was 4% after just 1 year. I take every one of these fan-run surveys, especially by the company at which wants things to be a certain way, I take them all with a grain of salt. However, it does seem a little bit fair, right? It's clear that, and many people pointed this out, like when League's Cup was going on, there was, I think somebody keeps tweeting, and I can't remember who, so I'm sorry, I forgot your name and I don't have it here, that when MLS played MLS teams, they showed up at a minus 34% to what their expected average season attendance is, right? If it was versus a Liga MX side, I think it was minus 17%. But I think it's pretty clear that outside, and things that we talk about a lot, outside of those last couple of games where MLS is then involved, a lot of the fans aren't showing up to the U.S. Open Cup games, right? And this is something we've spoken about. We have the numbers there. It's like League's Cup was an average of 25,000. U.S. Open Cup was like 6,000, 7,000, 8,000. So I think everybody's like, oh, man, because the quote that came out was, you know, we're breaking attendance records. You're not breaking attendance records, right? The numbers show that. However, the attendances are up for this brand new cup than the old cup, right? So again, the phrasing throughout this entire article is garbage. But when you read in and think about what they're trying to say, that's kind of what it should be. But I want to kind of get your thoughts on this poll that they ran.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm definitely on board with you where I take it with a huge grain of salt, because to your exact point, there's been clear, we'll call it, creative differences between MLS and U.S. Open Cup. And now all of a sudden they bring out their own statistics that say League's Cup is right on the heels of U.S. Open Cup. But and maybe I may draw a lot of hate from it. I found League's Cup to be way more entertaining than U.S. Open Cup, at least at the current state that it is. Teams were giving it their all. Liga MX was a great level of competition for us to go up against. And the format of the tournament made it really exciting. The long penalty shootouts, the drama of the one-off games towards the end of the tournament, which obviously, like, you know, one-off games is in the U.S. Open Cups as well, but it just feels a little less meaningful when teams are rotating more, or you're playing like a USL 2 side. Like, there's just not that same level of competition when you're going up against Monterrey or Tigres. Like, I found it to be way more exciting. The tournament was really great. I will say that I think a decent chunk of that was the Messi effect, him first coming in and taking that competition by storm, and that amazing run that him and the team went on made the tournament, I think, even like it took it to a next level of enjoyment. And I'd be very curious to see what it looks like without him, but I still think it will be very much enjoyable. And so I don't think the numbers are probably as close as they're making it out to be, but I would also not be surprised if League's Cup quickly catches up to U.S. Open Cup.
Right. And that's kind of the thing that I think plays a part in that, right? Like, you've got the same scenario, right? For the most part, it's a midweek game at a relatively early time. One is against either another MLS team or another Liga MX team. The other is against a lower opponent. You can compare those numbers and see what it means. And again, you've also got the recency effect, right? Oh, this is new, exciting, and fun. I'm going to go watch it. Versus U.S. Open Cup, okay, we're playing a team of third division guys. We should be able to get through. I'm going to go wait until we play an MLS side, right? There's tons of stuff, and we're not going to dive into all that data, but there was something that really interests me in that section where they use this term listening to the fans to describe their thoughts on this scenario and why they're making the decisions they are. And I find it really interesting because I had an interview with our friend Simple Coach, who we were talking mainly Alfred soccer, but we did dive into this content creation that we do, right? Because we're both content creators, and he had a really great quote that it's very easy to get this false sense of perception when it comes to what the majority is, when you get most of your thoughts from an algorithm that shows you what you want to see, right? When the algorithm has a literal page that says for you, because it's following all of your interactions and the things that you're liking and stuff, it's very easy to think there's a massive following behind you. And that's for pro MLS, anti MLS, pro rel, anti pro rel, politics, you know, NFL, anything you want. Right. It is tailored to give you this idea that you've got a huge following and a small group against you. Right. So if the league is spending money to figure out what the fans want with these polls or whatever they may be, and not just listening to Twitter, then they might have information we don't. And I am not one of those tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists of, you know, they're giving you what you want to hear and what we want to hear. And I don't have enough energy in my life to have that sort of outlook on things. So, you know, like you mentioned, Leagues Cup's fun, US Open Cup fun. If you are watching the right games or you have a reason to enjoy it, you know, like I said, as a soccer fan and understanding what it means, I think it's fun, right? I'll enjoy anything that I watch. I'll enjoy whatever happens there. So,
I'll jump in there really quick and then we can move on to the next point. To your point, there was definitely a ton of outrage, I think, on both the pro and anti MLS side at first about US Open Cup. And I think we touched on this briefly, but maybe it's just a waiting game at this point to see how much of that outrage actually turns into support during the US Open Cup. Like, let's see if there is a true increase in viewership, a true increase in attendance to these games, or if the outrage is just for the sake of getting, you know, Twitter impressions and trying to, you know, or if there's actually like frustration behind it and support for the US Open Cup. Cause I think we'll probably see more support for it than in prior years, but I don't think we're going to get to the level of support that you would probably have first assumed based on the amount of outrage there was on Twitter to begin with. I think people will probably just start to move on by the time US Open Cup rolls around.
Yeah, and like I said, they just made the announcement here that they are going for the first time in, what, 15 years or so, give or take, that they're going to be live streaming all of the first round games on, like, US Soccer is going to live stream all of them. Awesome, right? And that's kind of the thing that I've always noticed when I'm on, you know, because for those of you who don't know, I'm the one who runs the Twitter. Spoiler alert for our friends who thought that we were sharing these thoughts. Anything that's said is my thought, not Connor's, even though he, for the most part, agrees with me, I think, because, you know, I'm always right. And anyways,
we'll see.
the thing that I always notice, right, like, the MLS supporters are like, hey, man, this sucks, right? I hope things get better. And then things like this happen, we're like, awesome, that's great. The anti-MLS crew is like, anything good that happens to MLS is a conspiracy, is the wrong thing to happen in the world. Like, they want everything to die. It's such a weird, like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I saw a tweet. You might have sent it to me. I can't remember. I saw a tweet yesterday that said someone was like, I think at this point we should just scrap MLS completely and start over.
Yeah.
That's insane. Yeah, that's such an insane thought.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, when USL Championship, for example, right? They get this huge TV deal. You know, US Open Cup is getting streamed. We're like, hey, this is awesome, right? Everybody's getting shown on TV. We're going to grow the game. It's going to improve things all over the place. That's awesome. MLS gets a deal. Oh my God, they're trying to kill everything. They're trying to do it. And we're going to talk about that in Wednesday's episode, about this vision that everything MLS does is to kill everything around it instead of grow the game as a whole, right? And we'll get to that later. But there's one other thing on this section, and then we should almost be done here with at least this part of it. There was a statement in there that I really didn't like. And it goes like this. It goes, we believe there should be a scenario where teams should find their own way through the competition, but only when the competition properly serves the fans. And this is where I get stuck with these guys. And again, it's billboard material. It's quote soup. It's all this stuff that they're trying to PR their way through it. And it's very clear, right? It's not like, oh man, I need to sift through the weeds to figure that out. But if we're out here saying that the fans either care or don't care about the cup, and that's kind of like your point of it, I don't think that it's right to control what teams are doing with hopes of the fans starting to care and then returning them back. If that makes sense. I might have, you know, word vomited that a little bit, but a little bit of incentive into a tournament from the Federation, I don't think is instantly going to increase, you know, fan interest in a tournament that's 100 years old 100 times over, right? If your whole goal is to get to a certain point and then put the teams back in and say, hey, let them figure out what they want to do for themselves, why not just let them figure out what they want to do for themselves in the first place? That's the easy answer. The fans will, because guess what? If you start putting all this funding in, right, and the fans come in and say, oh man, that's awesome, we're playing for more money, and it is, you know, the big things, right? The travel changed. Not much changed on the fan side, I'm going to be honest with you. But all this stuff comes in. And then the first thing you do when you put your teams back is say, hey, you can play all your MLS Next Pro kids if you want. The fans are then going to be like, okay, well, what's the point of coming out to these things, right? Like, if this whole thing is reliant on what the competition is doing to serve the fans, which not much of that has changed, if you ask me, and then you're going to put your teams back just to let them decide if they're going to take it seriously or not, why go through all this nonsense? Why not just let that be the first decision that you make and move on with it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know if I honestly have too much to add on that. I think I completely agree. I don't see a reason why you wouldn't just let the teams choose in the first place. I think we had talked about this briefly because we had talked about, you know, if teams want to go and play their entire MLS Next Pro team, like, why does it matter if they want to go play their first team and the first team players are fine with it? Why does it matter? Like, I don't really see a reason why they need to make a decision on behalf of the teams themselves.
Right. And that's my whole point, right? Like, this should be, and it's funny, right? In the United States, right? You've got like the government laws and then the state laws. Like, this should be a state law thing, right? Like, let them figure out how they want to handle this certain topic. And then move on with, you know, you don't need
that's
to come
funny.
In and make
I had that same thought. I made, right? That same analogy in my head.
We're nerds, man. We're such losers. This is why
we really are, our honestly.
250 really episodes long because we don't go outside. Yeah, right. Like, this should be a state law thing, right? Not a national overarching federal law. Whatever. And then, you know, six topics down, player load comes back into the fray. Like, oh, don't forget, this is what we were originally complaining about anyway, right? They did change it a little bit and say it's less about the MLS congestion and more about like international windows with Copa America, Nations League, Club World Cup, Leagues Cup, which they were always going to play no matter what, expanded playoffs, all this stuff they were worried about. And it's a fair thing, but again, things that we've talked about before is expand the rosters, right? You don't need to worry about any of that. But they asked them about how League's Cup will impact congestion. And there was this very rehearsed answer, right? Only two teams are going to play all seven League's Cup games. And, you know, they may not even be MLS sides. So most are only going to play two to four, right? I wanted to get your thoughts on that. How did you feel about that quote?
On the surface of it, it sounds like a really stupid comment to make, like, oh, you know, only two teams are going to play the full seven games. But I mean, if I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's got to be something like maybe 9 out of 10 last U.S. Open Cups, both teams in the final have been MLS sides. So, you know, to say that, oh, it may not be an MLS side feels pretty, you know, naive. Considering the track record says that there's a very, very high chance that if the teams that are trying and play their first teams care, there will be most likely two MLS sides in the final, in which case they've now added seven games to their schedule. I think I can't remember if I only talked about this off air with you or if we talked about it in an episode, but I really don't have an issue with the schedule congestion. I think the issue is with the financial, like, roster restrictions and the fact that there's just not enough money or roster spots to build proper depth in the team to be able to compete in multiple tournaments, because it's not foreign to see leagues play multiple tournaments in a year. England plays the Carabao Cup and the FA Cup in a year, plus their European competitions and their league. So it's very much possible for MLS sides to play a very similar amount of games to the teams in England. The only difference is that England can build up however much depth that they can financially afford in, you know, financial rules, unless you're Man City, versus MLS sides who have to follow these really strict roster rules and then therefore cannot get the depth that they need to play in all these competitions. So I guess now that I've kind of talked myself through it, I think it's a really stupid comment, just because I am already of the mindset that you can make this work with the schedule if you give the teams the financial freedom to do so.
Well, all of that, totally fair. Here's the other problem. Change the words League's Cup in that statement with U.S. Open Cup, and it's the exact same thing. Most teams aren't playing all U.S. Open Cup games. Most of them might only play one, right? Most of them are only going to play at the max. If they all go through, I think the max is four. So now we're sitting here saying schedule congestion is an issue. And again, this is not us trying to defend that notion. We are all very, very clear. Schedule congestion, not the issue, right? But you're out here saying, oh, most teams are only going to play two, maybe three or four. Most teams in U.S. Open Cup are going to play one, and they're going to rotate their kids. You're not even going to get those miles on the legs of the players that are on your first team contracts. So again, the farther you go down this list of reasons behind what they're doing, the more it's like, you guys are like, you could have stopped after the third reason and been like, yep, that's it. But you talked yourselves into this, you know, closed loop of it all comes back to again, you guys trying to dance around the entire thing of money and control, right? Which is where they... Oh, go ahead.
No, sorry.
No, I'm done.
Oh, I was going to say, and yeah, to the exact point that you made before, why not just let the teams decide? If their first team players say, hey, I'm ready to go, I want to play in this, let them play. And if you're concerned that teams are going to play backups and, you know, the quality is not going to look so good on the field, Don wanted to play all of the MLS Next Pro teams. I bet you the backups on the first team are probably better than the Next Pro teams. So the quality really, I don't really understand. Like, there's no argument there to say that, like, oh, if we let the teams decide, you know, the quality of the teams is going to be down. Oh, you were ready to throw all like the 18, 19-year-olds out there and have them represent your teams for this cup. So I feel like that argument's already off the table. So I don't see why, if you're going to talk about schedule congestion, you don't just let the teams decide and let the players decide, because they're the ones that will know, you know, how much gas these guys still have in the tank.
Yeah. Like I said, and the only thing I was saying is that, you know, by the end of the article here, they did end up coming to the real reason, right? The financials, the real reason they didn't want to do this. And I'll jump in, because I think we're going to talk about it in the next section, but the hosting fees have been revamped, right? But our friends at US Open Cup, I think it's thecup.us is the official website there. They went and did a 2023 and 2024 comparison, right? And I added the numbers up. If an MLS team enters in the round of 32 and plays every game at home because of random draws or whatever, they are paying, in the old system, over $500,000, not including the percentage of revenue over a certain threshold. This is just the flat hosting fee for a tournament that they, at the, if they won the whole thing, would get $300,000 to win. Right.
Wait, so they're paying.
It's a hosting fee. So this hosting fee comes in, everybody, you know, puts into the pool, and we're kind of jumping a little bit ahead there, which is fine. They pay this fee. It goes into a pool to pay the refs, to put the prize money together, to cover travel fees, you know, this whole big thing, right? The value of these things, and again, this is a big if, right? You're not playing every game at home, but hypothetically, if you were, you are the final game, you're paying $325,000 plus half of the revenue over $375,000 to win $300,000. That doesn't make sense, right? That from a straight standpoint, right? And then you're going to be like, oh, well, it's all about the lower leagues and stuff like that. If you go over to England right now and say, hey, by the way, you guys are going to have to pay triple what your, or really that's double, right? So you got to pay double to triple, depending on what your revenue is, what you would earn in the FA Cup just to be in the FA Cup. Absolutely, that doesn't fly. I know it's about, you know, the lower leagues and things like that, but that doesn't fly anywhere, right? So, you know, the guys come out and they say, listen, we don't want to be the only ones putting financial contribution to a national tournament that we don't run anymore. Right, U.S. Soccer was meant to be the sponsor of this tournament. They were supposed to do the work to bring all these things in. And I know the first thing that people are going to say is, well, MLS put themselves in charge or in this spot by not caring about it when they were in charge with some over the last two decades. You're right. They could have done more. But we're in 2024, not 2014, right? So since 2022, if the whole thing is that MLS is now not in charge of funding, and you continue to expect them to dole out all the money year over year, pretty much, right? That doesn't work, right? Especially when you're not upping the prize. Couple that with the fact that the tournament doesn't draw eyes like it should, again, for whatever reason. You can put blame wherever you want. That's not the point of what we're doing here. The fact that it doesn't draw the tournament, the eyes don't draw the tournament, and we're still in this grow to compete with other leagues at home and abroad stage, right? That's the kind of big bulky phrase that I'll use. The move makes sense from that point of view. Historically, it's going to resonate with the passionate fans, and that's great. But it needs to make sense for the passionate fans and the casual fans. And the fact that the casuals far outweigh the passionate in this tournament is making, again, in MLS's eyes, this is an easy move for them. They're not making money off of it. Nobody wants to see it. They're no longer involved in the promotion of it. And again, you can say that they should be. You can say, like, at a super high level, big picture benefit of the group as a whole, that they should be. I would agree with that. But right now, that's not where we're at. So I can understand that if you're going to be losing at the most $250,000 just to play in a league that's already, you know, hemorrhaging money, it doesn't make sense, right? So, again, I don't love it, but I get it.
This is the argument they should have just made from the start, and the only argument they should have made, and then they should have just shut up about the rest of it.
Literally, right?
Because this makes sense to me, and I'm sure there's, you know, there's going to be people who will still read this and argue against MLS because that's just what they do, but why would to your exact point, like, MLS is a business at the end of the day. Like, they're trying to grow, they're trying to make more money. Why are they going to go into this tournament that, like you said, draws in very few eyes compared to other tournaments, where they're also just going to lose money just for the sake of building up other leagues? Which, you know, this isn't an England situation where you could make the argument that it makes sense for the top teams in England to send money to the lower teams, because those teams will eventually rise up and play into the top league and play into the Premier League. So that, to me, makes sense. Like, you're building up a product that's going to eventually filter in and be a part of the league. But there is no guarantee. And at this point, with the way MLS has been growing and the expansion fees that continuously keep growing as well, it seems less and less and less likely that there's any more USL championship sides that are going to filter into MLS. So where is the incentive for them to build up these other leagues? Like, these are completely independent leagues to MLS. USL is independent. There is no, especially with MLS Next Pro having their own, like, league now, there really is just no, like, direct affiliation. Like, I know there's probably some teams that still have close relationships with some of the USL teams and send players on loan and, you know, have like a good handshake relationship with one another. But I don't see why MLS would be incentivized to do that. It you wouldn't see the NFL going and spending money to raise up the like Arena Football League or the Canadian Football League. You wouldn't. Like, if somebody saw the NFL doing that, you'd be like, what are they doing? That's stupid. I don't see why it's different for MLS.
Yeah, you hit my closing kind of comments on this section right on the head there. You know, history, tradition, connecting the leagues, right? It's great. We love it. That's what makes certain leagues really, really good. MLS is approaching it like a business, and that makes a certain group of fans unhappy. And that's their right. They can hate it. They don't need to watch the league. That's fine. But when you stand in the other side's shoes for a minute, you can see why this decision comes about, where it's coming from, and understand the decisions behind it. I believe, right? Because that's what I do. I try to take both shoes and understand why, whether I like it or not. MLS did a bad job at marketing. Then they separated themselves from the responsibility to make it better because, you know, they're doing a bad job, and they were still asked to provide more funding for all these things. And again, in this idea, like you mentioned, where everything's connected and it's benefiting teams that are going to end up being a part of your group anyway, that's awesome. But the problem is that in America, the game had to be started in, from the top and flowed down, right? It had to start from the top levels and make the top level really entertaining so that you could survive on the way down, right? USL, and I was just looking this up before for our next episode on Wednesday. USL for the longest time was majority MLS two teams, right? Just to keep them from going under and keeping them going, right? Then they were able to find other teams that were able to find markets and grow, and now that's what they are, right? Because that's the way we had to do things. That idea of the top league just giving up money so that the others can use it doesn't work here. They're not connected. They're not a part of the same model. It doesn't work here. That bothers some people. And again, that is okay. But from a completely, like, just put the pieces together, make the puzzle, it doesn't make sense to do that. It sucks. But what you're asking then is for them to make a decision that goes away from the model that they're trying to build, right? That model has allowed us to be successful in a relative term. You can argue what successful means. I don't care. It has allowed us to be successful to the point where we are able to grow, put stadiums in every state that's got a team, academies, training facilities. I mean, the works. Every time you make a decision that breaks from that model, you risk setting up teams and or leagues for either setbacks or complete failures. That can't happen here in the U.S. for the next at least 3 years. It's just not. Here's the other side of it. I don't think it's a long-term decision, right? I think as long as these changes are helping grow the tournament overall and the money, or at least the opportunity to make money, is there, they'll be back, right? And people will argue like, oh, it's not about the money. It's about the history, right? It's about the meaning. And totally fair for a select group. But again, when you are a league that is still growing and still trying to find a way to maximize the amount of time you have to help you grow at the fastest rate possible, you have to make those decisions. And my hope is that the cup comes back stronger and better. Coinciding with that US Open Cup interview comes the announcement of US Open Cup rules. New 2024 rules have dropped, including a restructure of payments and the roster rules for the MLS Next Pro sides. So let's discuss. Firstly, a huge shout out to our friends at the cup.us for compiling all of this information in one easy place to find. Head on over there to get the rundown, US Open Cup facts, history. I mean, it's a great website. I have used it far, far more than I probably should have for a guy who needs to finish a thesis in 3 weeks. But alas, here we are. Let's go in order here, right? At the start, we're going to go with MLS is holding up. Oh, I'm sorry. I read that wrong. I'm tired. We're going to start with the thing that MLS is holding up as the impact that they left on the cup from withdrawing, right? Look at what we made happen by not being here. The hosting fees have been revamped, and it actually shows, as we were mentioning earlier, why MLS owners had such a problem with this cup in the first place. So as we mentioned, to pay the refs, the prize money, the travel, a set fee plus a percentage of the revenue over a certain threshold was taken, leaving the clubs with whatever's left, right? So I'll just give a rundown here, and then I'll ask kind of what your thoughts are on the change. So right now, or what it was last time, the first round, $750 of a hosting fee, plus 15% of any revenue you made above 100K. Realistically, you're not selling $100,000 worth of tickets, my guess, at least in the first round anyway. So you're holding on to most of that money. Get all the way up to the final, as we were alluding to before, it was $325,000 just to host the thing, which is $25,000 more than what you would have won if you won the thing, plus half of any revenue made above $375,000. So, and that, again, an interesting note, right? Anyways, now the three rounds, the first three rounds that you would have your hosting for $1,000, $1,000, and $5,000 flat. Anything you make above $100,000 or $200,000, whatever, you keep it, right? So you're just paying the flat fee and you're gone. After that, the flat fee goes away and it's just a percentage of the revenue. So 30% for the round of 32, 40% thereafter, and it doesn't go any higher. While that probably allows for a little less in the pockets of teams in terms of ticket revenue, you're probably getting profit out of those games because you don't have that flat fee taking out a ton of money. Thoughts on those moves, and then we'll go to travel after that.
I think it looks beneficial all around for all teams involved. If anything, I think it's probably beneficial for the lower league teams, because if you are one of those teams that makes it to the round of 32, round of 16, you don't have that flat fee anymore that you have to pay. Like if you're, when Sacktown made their run and went pretty far, like I don't remember how many games they were hosting, but if they were hosting any of those later rounds, that's like a large fee that was going to be hit to them, regardless of how much they actually made out of that game. And now it's just all dependent on how much they make out of the game, which I think is much better. It's much more realistic. I think it's beneficial for everybody involved. So I think it's a good change.
Yeah, totally. Right. Like again, less in the pockets in terms of what your revenue would have been. But really, at the end of the day, it's a net positive, right? You're hosting without this flat fee that's taking away tons of money. And again, and this is, it benefits everybody, right? If you're a lower league team making it all the way to, let's say the quarterfinals, right? Let's say you're a lower league team, and by that I mean a USL2 team, right? You make some magic run into the later rounds. Even let's go to the round of 32, right? That 18,000, or heck, let's go even deeper. Let's go to the third round. Let's say you win the first two rounds. You're a USL2 team. You really are just a for lack of a better term, a summer league team, right? A lot of the USL2 teams are teams that play in the summer, right? $12,000, if you get paired up with an MLS team, says, I'm not going to host that. I'm going to go play somewhere else, right? And then all of that revenue that you could have brought in from your fans coming in to see that goes away. Now you're just saying, hey, you're gonna go in. You can market the heck out of it. Bring whoever you want, extend your whatever. And all we're going to do is we're going to take 30% of whatever you make and the rest stays in your pocket. Massive win, right? Now, because there were so many of these arguments, right? Like, oh, the lower league team always 100% should host the upper league team. And I love that. I would love for that to happen. But if this was the structure where you're saying, yeah, you're going to do that, but you're also going to have to pay $18,000 if you're in the round of 32 just to have the thing go on, plus anything that you make above $100,000, we're also taking some of it, that de-incentivizes the lower league teams from doing that. So I think it's a massive win to get this restructured, a massive, massive positive in the grand scheme of things. Again, net revenue is going to be what it is, but cutting, first of all, you cut the percentages down from the semifinals and the finals. Realistically, and I'm sure they've done the math on this, the 30% and the 40% is probably less than that flat fee from the round of 16 on, right? $25,000, 40% of net revenue probably is less than $25,000, depending on who you are, right? So end of the day, more teams are getting money in their pocket. That's great. The other thing they said was that the tournament is now able to improve travel reimbursement. Again, a massive win for the lower league, mainly amateur and semi-pro sides, right? A flat $15,000 value until the finals where it became $30,000. That's what it used to be. Now, everything starts at $20,000 and you're increasing all the way up to $90,000 if you make it to the finals. Three times the reimbursement of the previous system. It's another win, right? The more that you can incentivize teams that this is going to be a competition that benefits them instead of costs them, it's a win. So I'm really a big fan of those.
Yeah, I don't think there's a debate on that. It's just more money across the board. So there's really not much for me to add on that.
I'm just giving you that space to share your thoughts and speak to the world, Connor. You do what you want to do. The next move, and the one that really matters the most here, that I think it's the best move outside of the money that they made, because they did a couple of other things, but MLS Next Pro teams have a different roster restriction than others, right? So this rule, and I'll read through them, I'll get your thoughts on it. Basically, it prevents MLS from MLSing this thing to the moon, right? So first, here are the rules to be on an MLS Next Pro team and play in the U.S. Open Cup. Firstly, you must be on a loan of 90 days at a minimum prior to 2 p.m. Central Time the day before. So if you want to throw your team, your big player down, get ready to lose him for 90 days. Secondly, cannot be above the maximum salary budget charge, which I think is like $685,000. So if you're making more than that on the salary charge, see ya. You can't play either. Then they also have to be averaging less than 15 minutes of MLS play. So that cuts basically the majority of the group out. Again, massive, great. And then no more than 7 players on loan from the first team, which based on the criteria we just read, I don't think many teams have that, even 7 players that would fit that category. So, you know, maybe Red Bull, but that's probably about it. Thoughts on the moves?
It makes sense, right? Like, if you didn't put these rules in place, then MLS could, like you said, MLS it and just send all their first team players down there and just dominate the tournament through their next pro teams or whatever. And I think it makes sense. I think it's again, incentivizing teams who are probably going to have these younger players on the first team that just aren't really playing too much, maybe more so just training with the team. I think those are the guys that they're going to target towards being able to move down to the next pro teams for this tournament. I'd be surprised if we see many of these types of moves at all. I just don't think it's necessarily worth it for an MLS team to move someone for 90 days just for the US Open Cup tournament. I think at this point, if you're already sending your next pro team, might as well just commit to it and send your next pro team. I don't think sending somebody on your first team who plays less than 15 minutes a game is really going to absolutely change things completely. The only thing I can maybe think of is if like someone just comes back from a long-term injury and this is a good way for them to kind of rehab, but that's about it. So I think the move makes a lot of sense. I think it's a good move from a US Open Cup perspective, like from their side of things. It makes sense. It was a good move to kind of like stay firm on your stance on everything here against MLS's actions.
Yeah, right. Listen, I like that they came in and dropped these. I like that because it would be so MLS to have an MLS team or an MLS Next Pro team get all the way to the finals against some USL team, and then they send their entire first team on loan for 5 days to win the cup. Right. That would be par for the MLS course. I mean, the last time a USL team made the final, Orlando City went and spied on a USL team. They sent scouts to watch their training session so that they can know what to prepare for. Like they MLS the crap out of this tournament, you know, day in and day out. Right. So if you're going to try and throw a fit to keep your teams out of this competition, you don't want to be there. This prevents you from going back and switching it up when it's convenient to you. So I like that. You know, they wanted out. They wanted their number twos in the tournament. They get it, and that's all they're going to get. So I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, agreed.
It seems like there was also a slight... Oh, did you have something to share there?
Nope.
Okay. Seems like there's also a slight change in the way that the pairings were drawn. The third round, something called draw groups are introduced. So all USL Championship teams drawn to play a lower level non-USL Championship side, which is a little funny to me because the big sticking point when this first MLS teams are coming back into the US Open Cup was that MLS sides were not being paired with other MLS sides until they absolutely had to, which is exactly what USL Championship is doing when they enter. So, I mean, what are we doing, right? I don't know. I found a little giggle out of that. In the fourth and fifth rounds, there's a four-team mini bracket constructed. So one MLS team, one USL Championship team, and then two winners from the third round, whoever they may be, matched up geographically to the best of their ability. Once the fourth round is over, the fifth round takes place between the two winners of this mini bracket. And then finally, from the quarterfinals onward, it's a final eight. So winner, you know, East and West, winner goes on, loser goes home. So not too many massive changes there. I just thought it was kind of interesting to share. And then the last big one I took here, and I'm moving past this government change or the governance change, which seems to be a really big talking point, but I don't have enough information on what it was beforehand. It seems like they just replaced the people who were in charge and didn't release their names. I don't know. Everybody's kind of using that as the tinfoil, like, conspiracy theory. Like, oh, they're not releasing the names. It means it must be all MLS, and MLS is getting away with everything because... Relax, right? So good and bad in what this change is. The US Open Cup still has a Champions League spot. However, there are a couple caveats here. If the winner of the US Open Cup does the double and qualifies via another means, the runner-up makes the Champions Cup. If they both qualify in another way, the next highest team in the MLS Supporter Shield standing qualifies. And I think that's how it used to be beforehand. The thing I don't love about this, and I want to hear your thoughts on it, CONCACAF has the ability to award this spot to the MLS team if their MLS Next Pro side wins it. Thoughts on that?
I mean, to be honest, I would be pretty surprised if an MLS Next Pro team won this, considering there are, what is it, eight or so MLS teams that have committed to playing. I think even if they rotate half their team, maybe even the full thing, I think they'll probably still beat the MLS Next Pro teams. So I would be very surprised if we're even put in a situation where an MLS Next Pro team wins it for their first team. But I can see where there might be frustration for people on that, because now you're kind of like rewarding the teams that didn't even decide to show up. So I would probably err on that side as well. I think it seems a little bit far-fetched for you to just not show up and then still get a reward out of it at the end of the day. So I think it would be really cool if that spot ended up with a USL team. I'd love to see them competing in CONCACAF Champions League. So yeah, I think that's pretty much my thoughts on that.
Yeah, I hate this, right? This was the worst possible outcome of this whole debacle, right? MLS is going to back out. They're going to send their kids. And if their kids pull it off, magical as it may be, they're going to reap the rewards of a Champions League spot without putting in the effort, which I think is totally, completely, and utterly wrong.
Well, let me ask you this though. What do you think are the chances that an MLS Next Pro team actually goes on to win the whole thing?
Don't know. I'll be honest with you, because I haven't watched enough MLS Next Pro to see it. I don't think it's very likely, right? That being said, the fact that it's still a possibility is the problem, right? The whole negative PR on this thing is MLS is going to not fulfill their PLS requirements, which is a whole nother debacle we really haven't gotten into. But that's because it really was never on the table as much as people want to say it. US soccer wasn't going to do it. Not really much effort to dive into it, whether they should have or not. That's another story. MLS wants to do what they want and still get the rewards of the Champions League, still get the rewards of the, you know, earning the title, right? Like, let's say Huntsville wins it for Nashville. Nashville is going to, you know, put that on their resume, right? possibly, hypothetically, I don't know if they would, right? But, you know, getting all of the plaudits without putting in the work, the effort, or what it means is wrong, in my opinion. I don't think it's the right thing to do. I think it's the wrong thing to do. So the, you know, I think that's the worst possible outcome. If an MLS Next Pro side wins it, let's say it's the Town FC, right? Because they just rebranded as Earthquakes 2, because we're going to talk about that next, in next episode, actually. So make sure you subscribe for that. If the Town FC wins it, the Town FC should be the team that goes into the Champions League, whether they get killed or not. Like, that's not the point of this. But the point is, right, that's like, I don't know. I just think it's wrong. I was going to make another comparison, but I don't think I have one, right? It's just, if you're going to send your next pro to the tournament that qualifies you for a championship, don't send your pros for the championship if they qualify. You know what I mean?
I mean, I don't know if there's the, I think with the rules that US Open Cup has put in place on what players can be transferred into the next pro team, I still think we're talking about a really low percentage chance that an MLS Next Pro team wins this whole thing. I think sure, it's but very unlikely. And I personally don't see an issue with a team, like an organization, celebrating it. So like, if, like you said, if Huntsville wins it for Nashville, I don't see an issue with Nashville celebrating it because it's still part of their organization. But I definitely still agree with the, it shouldn't be the like Nashville team that's in CCL reaping the rewards from it for not even showing up.
Here's what I'm, you know, right? Like, we're sitting here saying like, oh, it's such a low percentage. Bro, this is MLS. You know, stuff happens out of the blue like every other week, right?
Don't you remember when the two teams were in USL? Like, they were never compete. Like, they were never consistently winning the top of the USL. Like, they, I remember plenty of two teams that were like rock bottom of USL championship. And you're adding in again all these USL championship sides again, who previously these two teams couldn't really compete with. Maybe some of them were okay. Some of them were like mid-table. I know Red Bull 2 was not always towards the bottom. They were usually mid-table, I'd say.
But we got bad after we brought all the kids up.
Yeah, that's fair. But then you're now tacking on another like 8 MLS sides who are most likely going to play enough first team players that they're probably not losing to an MLS Next Pro side. Like, it would have to be some ridiculous run for them for a Next Pro side to win it. So, and I'm going to stick by that. And if it does happen, then feel free to clip away. Clip this clip as many times as you want. But I think it is super unlikely to see a side win at all, a Next Pro side win at all.
I sure hope so, but we'll leave it to the listeners, right? What do you guys think? You know, you guys have been really good interacting with us on YouTube specifically, sharing your thoughts. So we appreciate that. Please continue to chime in because again, really, we watch the game because we like the game, right? The way that things go about and things happen, that's, you know, we're relatively neutral on that. So we'd like to hear your thoughts, and we can see it from both sides. So thanks everybody for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you follow us wherever you get your spot, podcast, so you know when we next go live, which will be Wednesday, where we're covering Champions League, MLS Next Pro teams as renamed entities, if you will, and rule changes that are coming to MLS, presumably. So all that comes on Wednesday, and then make sure you follow us on social media, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, because we post all of our clips there. It's very, very fun. We interact with you guys a lot. But thanks so much for listening, everybody. We hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you next time on the next episode of the Designated Players and MLS podcast. See ya.